The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Time is 7:46. Anthony Reich, a very good morning. Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Yeah, we're all getting back to work, Howard. It's all slowly but surely returning back to some semblance of what we used to know. So all good here in Israel at the moment. Thank you.
Yeah, so definitely a very positive sentiment coming out of Israel at the moment with people going back to work, people in parks, etc. It really does make a huge difference.
It makes a massive difference, and of course the big turning point was yesterday when the kindergarten children returned back to school. When I say back to a semblance of normality, I mean we need to kind of term that in very, very cautious, in a cautious way, because even though we're returning back to regular activities, everything is different. So even the kindergarten's children who returned to school yesterday are returning on the basis of classes split into two, half the time, one half of a class, half the time, the other half of the class. I think what they're doing is 3 days a week, one half and 3 days a week, another half. And so there are differences and still a lot of challenges. Parks were yesterday opened to the general public, but again, with very stringent rules, social distancing is being applied, certain hours in some parks have been devoted to older people for them to be there in the mornings and then other people to join later on. So everything is definitely different. You know, there was, I've seen coffee shops that are open, but the big sign saying only for takeaways and only four people allowed in the shop at a time in order to go in and take away. Yesterday was there was a huge drama in the morning because all of a sudden a lot of people have been returning to work and the public transport has been significantly reduced. The trains are still not operating. Buses are operating on a much limited service, and also not only a limited number of buses, but within the bus itself, a limited number of people who can actually go into the bus because of social distancing rules being applied. So of course there was massive pressure at bus stations with people trying to get buses, more people than had been expected. And so these are challenges that we're going to have to deal with as we get back to working in a more regular way. And of course there's also been restrictions lifted on Israelis returning from abroad. There are still Israelis who've been caught abroad. The Israeli government is still helping to return some of them. The latest batch from India, and the latest news on Israeli nationals who are returning from abroad is that they won't be required by law to go to these coronavirus hotels, which has been the case up until now, but instead they're entitled to self-isolate at home under stringent conditions. Lots of concern about the fact that that might not be enough, but that's just the way it is. And I think, you know, my overall comment is that we're now 2 weeks into the gradual lifting of the coronavirus restrictions. And I think that that's enough time now for us to begin to feel if there should be a spike. So I think that this week is really going to be the critical week. If we see a spike in the number of cases and the number of infections, see an increase in people coming through the medical system again, then of course that would be a signal for a further lockdown. But at the moment, everything really seems to be moving in the right direction, and certainly the numbers are not indicating that there's going to be a second spike. So let's hope that that's the case.
Mm, absolutely right. Even though a new government has yet to be sworn in, Anthony, Israel effectively does have a new government after Prime Minister Netanyahu's new coalition with Benny Gantz received the support of 72 members of Knesset in the vote of confidence on Thursday. What now still needs to be done in order to put a new government into office?
Well, the main job that needs to be done is really the allocation of jobs for the boys. Now, you know, appointing ministers in the government, deputy ministers, that's the work that really needs to be done. It was quite surprising to some people that there were 72 members of Knesset voting in favor of the new government after three elections struggled to get past the 61 Knesset member of Knesset mark. And now all of a sudden we had 72 people supporting the new government. So it indicates that there's going to be hopefully a certain level of stability around this new government. The Yamina party, that's the Naftali Bennett and Ayelet Shaked party, they've decided they are not joining the new government, that they will effectively be in the opposition for the current Knesset term. So that was one of the clear aspects of the government as we went into the vote of confidence on Thursday. And apparently the Likud, the number of jobs that will be available to members of Prime Minister Netanyahu's Likud party has gone down from 15 to 10. So there's a massive battle. Some people are talking about almost a meltdown within the Likud, with people trying to battle for the jobs that are available. But what also becomes clear is that the jobs that are not ministerial jobs, such as ambassadorial jobs, the appointment of ambassadors abroad and things like that, become even more critical. And there's lots being written at the moment about who Israel's and the next ambassador, to the United Nations is going to be to replace Dani Danon. He's been extended, I think, already twice, and his job is certainly over. His term is up. And he's due to return to Israel. And so there's a lot of speculation as to who the next United Nations ambassador, Israeli ambassador will be. We're certainly not quite sure. Apparently, Prime Minister Netanyahu does prefer Gilad Erdan. But there's a lot of work yet to be done in allocating all the jobs. We understand that the government is due to be sworn in on Wednesday. So by then, we hope that we will have all the ministerial jobs filled, all the deputy ministerial portfolios sorted out as well. And I'm guessing many of these non-governmental jobs, but people who are, let's say, owed positions by a Prime Minister Netanyahu from the Likud, their jobs hopefully will have been sorted out by then. So I guess there's a lot of work to do between now and then for this issue to be resolved.
And the vast majority, I thought this is quite an interesting topic, the vast majority of Israelis believe that Israel has an obligation to assist Jewish communities in the diaspora who are struggling to cope with the COVID-19 outbreak. How does this sit with the current relationship between Israelis and diaspora Jews? I mean, we have spoken about this before, that this has been under strain, especially with the United States.
So it's an ongoing topic of discussion, Howard. And I think that the way that South African Jews view things is not necessarily representative of how Jews elsewhere around the world see Israel, Israel's actions, see Israel as representing themselves as a Jew, even though they might not live in Israel. And, you know, there was certainly a period of time in the post-Shoah period when Jews felt enormous pride for Israel, and there was massive amounts of support, assistance, financial help, planting trees, whatever you want, which came from diaspora Jews towards Israel. And it fascinates me that now it seems as if the pendulum is switching around, and that it's now Israel coming to the support of diaspora Jews rather than the other way around. And I think that that's exactly the way that it should be. I think that as a general rule, Israel does see itself as a country that represents not only those who live in Israel of all religions, but also Jews from around the world who don't live in Israel to the extent that they might come into crisis of one sort or another. And we've certainly seen that over the years, you know, the raids at Entebbe and other actions that have been taken, some of which we don't even know about, by Israeli forces to help Jews around the world. Are well known and felt, some of which are not so well known, but are certainly as part of Israel's obligation to Jews around the world. But this one comes as a little bit of a surprise to me, the fact that as many as 80% of Israelis that were interviewed in this particular poll felt that there was at least a minor obligation on Israel to provide medicine, food, medical equipment, and even financial assistance to Jews in the diaspora. 80%, that's a massive majority of people who feel that there is some obligation. And it's interesting that even though Israelis at the moment are feeling a huge crunch in Israel because so many people have lost their jobs, so many people are struggling financially, so many people are struggling to get the support that the government has said that they will give and for bureaucratic reasons is not so simple to get their hands on. And even in spite of that fact, there are so many Israelis who feel that there is an obligation on Israel to help Jews in the diaspora. For me, it's an interesting situation. It's an interesting opinion that's come forward from Israelis. I would not have expected it, I have to tell you. If I hadn't read this with my own eyes, it would have been difficult for me to believe it, but there it is. And I think that it does show the extent to which Israeli Jews feel some sort of a kinship with Jews around the world, even though we see, particularly in the United States, but also in other countries around the world, that especially the younger generation seem to have much less of a link, a feeling, a bonding with Israel than has been the case in previous generations. I don't know if you agree with that and whether people, the listeners out there, feel the same. But I think that this is a very strong indicator of the fact that there really is a link, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, I think so, definitely. And the fact is that it's not always an easy relationship. All that means is that it is a relationship.
I think there are lots of issues that come into it, because, for example, there are many attempts by Jews from the diaspora to try to somehow dictate things that happen in Israel, whether it be on a religious standpoint or from a political point of view, or, you know, international relation point of view, to try to influence the way that the Israeli government or Israeli people might behave. There are also issues of financial side of things, because, you know, the thing that Israelis would normally say is, well, you don't live here and you don't pay your taxes here, therefore you have less to say about what happens here than we do as people who live here. And I've heard that said so many times before, and yet there is this link. So, you know, I think it's a great talking point.
Absolutely.
And I think that there's so many discrepancies between the way that people behave towards each other in the heat of the moment, and yet at the basis there does seem to be a strong link.
Absolutely. Finally, tonight is Lag BaOmer, but obviously it's not going to be as it always has been in the past. How does it look? What is going to be happening?
Well, bonfires are out. Let's start with that.
Right.
No bonfires. People are not allowed to light bonfires. And in fact, the government has said that fines will be issued to those people who dare to light a bonfire for Lag BaOmer. Now, this whole thing about bonfires is interesting for me, because it's been very traditional for Israelis particularly, and indeed Jews around the world, to light a bonfire to celebrate Lag BaOmer, and it comes from a certain tradition, but there's no halachic basis to it as far as I'm aware. And in fact, at least the mayor of the city where I live has come out in a video saying that this year there will be no bonfires, and actually he is not unhappy about it, because he would have suggested, even in the event that we weren't in this corona lockdown situation, that there should be no bonfires. He dislikes the idea of bonfires. He thinks that it's destructive, it damages the environment, it's unsafe for people involved, it's not a good idea, it might be a Jewish tradition, it has no halachic basis according to the view that he put forward, and therefore why are we lighting bonfires? Why should we do such a thing? He would rather, in his words, open the municipal swimming pool for free to all young people on Lag BaOmer to celebrate Lag BaOmer there. That's his notion of how to celebrate Lag BaOmer. And I suppose that Israelis are going to have to find a new way to do it this year, because there will be no bonfires. And also the whole gathering of people at Mount Meron, which is so traditional at Lag BaOmer, and the cutting of hair of young boys who've reached the age of 3, which traditionally happens at Mount Meron on Lag BaOmer, also will have to be changed. Of course, Mount Meron is the center point, because that is the place where Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai has been buried, where his grave is, and people have to visit his burial site on Lag BaOmer. But that's not going to happen this year. And we understand that the government has authorized, I think, 3 bonfires in the Mount Meron area, which will be lit by 3 respected rabbis, and they will have a few followers with them. I'm told no more than 200 people will be allowed to gather in the area of Mount Meron. The rest of the area will be closed. So this year, Lag BaOmer is going to be very, very different indeed. I'm not really sure what people are planning to do as an alternative. And in fact, some of the schools are even going to be operating tomorrow, because of the fact that they've been closed down and they need to catch up, which is very, very unusual, because Lag BaOmer is usually a day off school. But we'll talk a little bit tomorrow, or maybe even the next day, about what exactly happened on Lag BaOmer, because I'm not sure what to expect.
Absolutely. Very, very interesting indeed. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow, same time. Just before we go to the news, let's wrap up the sports question. Who was the last non-British or non-German driver to win the Formula One world title? Taking a look at some of your answers. Karen says Lewis Hamilton, but I'm not sure. David Zimmerman says Sebastian Vettel, but that is just a guess. The answer, according to Louis Karpus, is Kimi Raikkonen in 2007. So there you have it. All right, I asked you how you are feeling, because my sense is that people are feeling just that little bit flat this morning, and I want to know if I am right or if I am wrong. Karen says you are 100% right, feeling not right, something is off. And Benjamin says, hello Howard, yes you are correct, over here on the farm and between friends, we are not happy. This government seems to have forgotten that many of us, the citizens, do not trust them at all. Now they have made their manner of deciding these draconian lockdown rules a state secret. Why do they need to hide? And it is interesting, because Anati was saying during the break or during the song, are people flat because of COVID-19 or is it government's fault? I certainly think that lack of confidence in government does add to it. But we're going to talk about that when we come back after the news.